I'm Bill Wennington, and you're listening to Game Day Routine.
Hello, and welcome back to Game Day Routine. This is your host, Rob Howe. Today, I'm very excited to introduce you to my guest, Clarissa Cardenas, who, if you're into the music scene, especially in Austin, you may know as the ATX Concert Queen on Instagram. She's a medical sales pro who has turned into an Austin music blogger. And if you followed her journey like I have, a pretty incredible run over the last few years and just continuing to really get started. She and I met through Dallas Comedy House. Shout out to Dallas Comedy House. Rest in peace to the Dallas Comedy House. And we've been friends for years. She also, one of the reasons why we became friends early on was because she also played college basketball, and she walks us through how she applied the things that she learned as a college athlete to being a music blogger and a successful sales executive in the medical sales world prior to her current ventures. So enough from me. I'm going to turn it over to Clarissa Cardenas' Game Day Routine. Clarissa Cardenas, the ATX Concert Queen, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here.
I am super excited to have you because I think when I was coming up with the concept for this show, you were one of the first people I had in mind because I think so much of what this show is about, obviously like sports and who you used to be when you were younger and an athlete, but also music and also just thinking about your younger self and then going that into now, whether entrepreneurship, starting your own business and kind of betting on yourself. I think you have like such a unique perspective on all of those things. I'm really excited that you had the time and that we're going to get to dig into this today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me. I think everything you just touched on as you're saying these things, it's like all these ideas are popping up and very formative years for sure that have developed. I don't think people realize it until after, like you said, you actually have time to sit and reflect and you're like, wow, it does have such a big influence on my life and impact on who I am today. So very cool. I love the idea, this whole idea of your show.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. So you and I met at Dallas Comedy House. So yeah. Which I also think.
Either. I'm certified funny, y'all. So
yeah, like you are a graduate of the Dallas Comedy House improv program.
Yeah.
Which, when you're in improv, you don't see a whole lot of other tall people. So you and I think from the jump, we're like, okay, this person, I see them, they're there. But also, I think just that time in Dallas, I think 2014, 15. Where Dallas Comedy House was really in this like very artsy, very sort of underground community of people who, I mean, almost every person that I've met there over the years has done something really incredible and just really cool people. So as we got to know each other more, this part of your life kind of surfaced that you don't talk too much about now, like you live a very public life on Instagram now as ATX Concert Queen, but let's talk a little bit about college basketball, Clarissa.
Yeah. She was a vibe.
Big vibe. Big Hooper vibe.
Yeah, college Clarissa. It was so funny. I was literally telling my friend this yesterday. But who I was, like coming in, I was just telling you before, I didn't really want to play college basketball. I didn't have any aspirations to really take it further because I was just kind of over it. It's something I had done for fun and had played. And then it was one of those things that I'm grateful that my dad really kind of pushed me into like going in that direction because it wasn't something I didn't know. At the time, it was kind of like these unique circumstances. I didn't have a really good high school coach that returned phone calls, did not get back to coaches for me and were trying to get in touch with me or trying to get highlight. Couldn't do anything. She was not any help in that. And, you know, I had some big opportunities to play at some really big schools that passed me up for that reason because I didn't have anyone kind of going through. My parents didn't know. So then I ended up going to a small D2 school in Mobile, Alabama, which when I was originally going out there, I thought it was gonna be like rolling tumbleweeds. And, you know, hearing this like Texas girl going to Alabama and, just Forrest Gump was like my only reference point for Alabama. So went there, but also was very naive to just things in general, living in San Antonio and kind of having a sheltered life there and then going to Mobile, Alabama, which is a very polarized city, but still very, you know, with, you know, white, black. And then there was like me, like, who is she kind of thing. So playing on the team that I was on, I actually went in with like eight, it was a rebuilding year, with eight freshmen, so which was crazy.
Wow, we had eight freshmen,
like two walk-ons, and then six scholarship. I was part of the scholarship crew that came in. And I mean, we got dominated by some of, as you know, like a lot of those, the junior college teams were incredible. And we would go scrimmage them. I'm not even going to talk about really embarrassing stuff, but very humbling as well to like kind of learn your place like that as a freshman.
Well, I think it's so interesting. You know, you had interest from some bigger schools, and you go and you sort of have this predisposition of what it's going to be like. And, you know, For me as well, I just remember it was really, even though it was going to the next level, it was up like two or three levels from how committed I was to basketball at the time.
Right.
So, and for you guys also to be really young, like eight freshmen, that's almost the whole team.
It was pretty much the whole team. And I kind of came over too. I was very fortunate and very blessed in hindsight that I didn't really realize I was blessed to be really good in sports, have really good grades. And then I kind of just coasted through my senior year. So my freshman year, I was still in like party mode. I just wanted to go out and party, my first time away from being home. And, you know, when you're that age, you can bounce back really quick from things. And you're not, you know, our teammates, we'd be like reeking of, you know, just alcohol and not the best things and making sure our coach didn't get too close to us. But like you said too, we had our freshman year, we had a coach who, I mean, she put us through the ringer as far as like workouts. And I think it was essentially, she was pushing us to see who would quit, who. So like you said too, to that point of learning about yourself, you realize, like, I look back now and I'm like, oh my God, how did I do that? Like, I don't think I could do that now. And I had never really pushed myself since until I did. I auditioned for Sports Illustrated last year. And that was probably the first thing, because I wanted to feel that again. Like with sports, you push yourself and you have someone else externally pushing you, but you also have to do it because that's your job. And it's just a different kind of, it's not like a job where people go punch in and punch out. It's a job that you eat, live, breathe. It's your life. It's your whole livelihood. It's paying for your school. You have to pay, you have to play good to keep your scholarship. So there's a lot. College, Clarissa, so many things. I mean, I think from going even there, and we were sponsored by McDonald's and not really having a like concept of what a diet was, because we metabolized everything so quickly. And I ended up getting hurt. And this was probably like the most kind of real transformative thing I went through was my sophomore year. And I don't really talk about this ever, but my sophomore year, I dove on the ground for a ball and I was like gunning for, like, I wanted to be a starter. I was like, I know I can do this. And I was gunning for it. So like even Christmas break, I took it as an opportunity. Like, I'm going to work harder than everybody. I'm going to go home, I'm going to run, I'm going to work out, I'm going to practice, I'm going to shoot. And I just devoted, I was like, this is my, I'm going all in moment. And so we come back from Christmas break and I was just crushing it. I was scoring. My coaches were like, damn, you know, so my college nickname was C Murda.
Wow. So music is always in there somewhere. I love it.
C Murda, because I was killing folks on the floor. That's what they said. So I, but yeah, my college coaches were like, oh, you know, C Murda, like, she's crushing it. Like, I just came out, I was literally coming out there crushing it, felt really good. And then this practice, I dove on the ground for a ball, this girl landed on top of me, and then I couldn't get up. And I'm like, what's happening? I could not turn my back without there being like shots of pain up my spine. I thought I like broke my back. I didn't know. And I was crying and I was in so much pain and I couldn't move. So they called the ambulance. And long story short, I was in a wheelchair for 2 weeks. And I couldn't walk. Basically, wow. I had sent my whole back into spasm. And so instead of redshirting, I ended up trying to continue to play through it. And, you know, in hindsight, I wish I would have redshirted. But I think there's something in an athlete that you probably know as well. You have this pride and you want to play through it. You feel like you need to play through it and that you don't want to show any sign of weakness and feel like you're there. You know you can contribute and things you can do, but physically you can't. And so that is something, and that's an injury that I kind of still struggle with too. Even though I'm sitting right now, like, I always have to really like make a conscious effort on how I sit, but that really affected me and just my whole lifestyle, and, you know, put on tons of weight because I wasn't working out, but I was still eating like I used to. And right. It was just a whole thing, and just feeling really alone. I remember during that time of like watching, sitting on the sidelines, watching my teammates play, and I couldn't, you know, and when I would try to go out there, I'd be in so much pain afterwards. And so it just was not, that part was not fun, but very, very jarring.
Well, you touched on something that I think is really interesting. And with high level athletes, there comes a mindset, I think, especially when we're young, before maybe something like this injury that you're talking about, or some sort of either disappointment or learning experience or hurdle that you've got to overcome. And that is, I think, this like alpha sort of mentality where nothing bothers you. You are going to win at all costs. You are trying not to ever look like you have any weaknesses. You're constantly trying to put on and, you know, either fake it till you make it or like put on this sort of ego or external presence. Right. And then something like this happens where
you're my therapist right now. I mean,
hey, yeah. I mean, are pods not therapy?
I'm like, oh my God, it's like in my head right now.
Well, and I think that's what's so interesting, because I want to transition now before we move to how this experience has helped you today, and the person that you are now. I want to focus still on that young Clarissa for a second. That, like, yeah. You know, what were you like? What was your prep like? Let's just focus on that Christmas break, for example, because I think you also, I want to touch on goal setting later, because you mentioned your Sports Illustrated piece. Right. When there's a clear thing that you want, I think as an athlete, I know it's like, oh, I can develop a program to get here.
100%.
And so, like, I think that that's a really interesting element, especially with basketball, is like every offseason you sort of pick apart your game and figure, what am I going to add? What weakness do I need to work on? And so I want to, like, how did you get ready? How did you prepare? You mentioned like running and lifting and shooting when you were at home. Like, did you have any sort of like, how'd you curate the mindset to do that? What was your like go-getter? I got to believe that music was part of it, just knowing you.
Oh, 100%. Growing up, like, I was so obsessed with basketball, and I haven't been this obsessed with anything since, which kind of, you know, I love music and I love everything, but there's just that, you just have that innate love for something. And I would literally come home after school when I was growing up. And my dad, you know, he put up a basketball hoop for me, and I would go and listen to the radio, like the hip hop station. I would just be like dribbling the ball with the music, and but that's what kept me hype all the time as like a kid. And then it would literally get to like the top nine at nine. So young folks might not know what that means, but like radio station, you know, you'd have to hit your play record at the same time to record it. So I used to listen to that, and I would play all the way until, cause I wanted to like play basketball up until then. But as far as like when I went to, you know, high school, we kind of talked on like, that was mainly, and this sounds super cocky, but I was good. So there wasn't as much prep that went into it, because I already knew like, oh, I got this, you know, right. But I would still practice and I'd still play, but it was more about the camaraderie and the team for me, and like building, like having those memories and listening to music. And really big into, I was so into music, so much so that like I was laughing because I was thinking about like my warm-up music. And like in high school, like our whole team would listen to like Bombs Over Baghdad by Outkast. Like that was our like pregame ritual. And then when I got to college, that's when I told you I had to really lean more into practicing. And I was like, okay, the level of the game is a lot higher. I can't get away with being lazy on defense because someone's going to smoke me or whatever, you know, that the girls are faster, the girls are taller. I was kind of in a weird height too, because I'm five nine and a half, 5'10", but I was in, you know, D1, I would probably be a point guard. But like in going into this, it's like, I was in this weird, like post guard situation. And so I was a really good shooter, but, I would love, like the way I prep for those games too, was through music. So I actually made, it's so funny that I did this now, but like I was kind of like the go-to plug for music at my school, which is a little fun fact. So everyone,
some things never change, right?
Yeah. Literally, I would make everyone come to me to make their like mix CDs. So they'd be like, Clarissa, like, get me. So here I was, like, I made our warm-up CDs, you know? And so the
Let's talk warm-up CDs for a second, yeah. Because that is like a forgotten, like that doesn't exist anymore. But like, that was like a sacred thing.
Oh yeah.
Well, cause like, you know, there's no discs. Nobody like,
that's
no.
Right. Oh.
So I just remember like there was a guy on our team that had a warm-up disc and it like somebody had doodled like Sharpie on it and they would like
warm-up
it and it like get it to the guy for, you know, for our pregame stuff. So a very sacred ritual.
Yes.
The pregame mix.
I had to make sure it didn't have like the cuss words on it and the different things. So I made that CD every year for my team. And I took a lot of pride in that, of being like the one who had all the music and the one that had all that would make everyone's CDs for the team. And that was really, really fun.
That's super cool. So Bombs Over Baghdad for high school. What was your go-to for college?
It was Duroc Wilder with Redman. You know, that microphone check. Yeah. I have it on repeat. And so, yeah, I just listened to those songs on repeat, but I don't know anyone that didn't listen to music. It's like, we all like, I'm sure you saw too, like on the bus, everybody had their, like, you know, we had CDs at the time. So everybody had like their Walkmans and we were all listening to music and it was our way too. It's like, we didn't have, I mean, our cell phones and stuff weren't a big deal back then. And like we talked to each other, but everyone also like gave each other that space during that time of like, this person is in their zone. And music was a way of blocking the world out. And I think wow, this is getting heavy.
Let's get there. Was it a way to block out the world?
It was. And I think that is what I use it for now, even with, so like with my platform and what I use, like, music's my escape. Music is the all encompassing, you know, even though you're hearing it, but like concerts for me are like, it's a visual, mental, you know, audio, like everything. I can just completely unplug from the world. And that's what, and I love that. I love the whole concert experience. I love music. And, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of disco, a lot of like Michael Jackson, Paula Abdul, Madonna. So anything that you could like dance and move to was my influence. And so anything that kind of, but that's, I think that directly does have, when you're conditioned as a young child to like, that is your escape and that's your safe place, is with music for me and warming up. And that's kind of, I do, even now, like, sometimes I can have music on, sometimes I can't, like if I'm really trying to focus, but I usually have to have some kind of music on to like, has a buffer for me to kind of keep me away from everything.
It's really about like curating a state, right? And I think that, you know, performance coaches and people talk about like, how do you get into your zone? How do you create that space for yourself to be successful? And for so many people, myself included, music is part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love music. And it's funny now because everyone thinks that I'm so into like EDM and I don't listen to, they're like, you know, you listen to a lot of EDM, but like, what about, I was like, I actually listen to everything.
I think it's the bedazzled cowboy hat. I think that's probably.
Is that what it is?
It must be.
All the sparkly stuff. But that's just for me. I tell you, on a weekend, I want to escape. I want to listen to music. I want to dance. And that's typically not going to be like a country set, maybe, that is a little more chill or folky. You know, I'd rather have something that's more upbeat because I'm like been busting tail to get to this point or whatever it is at night. And I just want to have that. So that's where I typically go. But I love the classics. I love, you know, Led Zeppelin. I love classic rock and roll. I love hip hop was really big for me growing up for obvious reasons, and not really being introduced to that scene until I got to college, because I came in, like, we had Outkast. That was probably like the only real rap group I knew was Outkast, and then some Juvenile and like the Big Timers. But then going into, you know, I still listened to tons of Dave Matthews Band when I was going in. My teammates are all from like Atlanta, Nashville, Florida. And they're like, what are you listening to? You know, and so I got introduced to a lot of like the Atlanta rappers that I was playing for my friend last night. He's like, oh my God, I never heard any of this. But it's just some real unique, like, set, like down dirty
deep
South.
Cuts, dirty South. And yeah, like Outkast for those, like, you know, the top, very top of the mountain, obviously, but like very,
totally,
like very mainstream from it.
Yeah. I didn't know at the time, you know, I didn't know that that's what it was. Same with like Juvenile, Back That Ass Up. Like those were all the kind of general music that I knew. But when I got into college, that's when I learned about like 8-Ball MJG and, you know, the other like kind of Screwed and Chop stuff and all, like mainly a lot of Atlanta rap. And that's what I was mainly introduced. That's mainly what we listened to, because we had a lot of Atlanta girls on our team. So it was all like Atlanta. So that's where I learned a lot of ratchet moves. People don't see that side of me, but she's in there. She's in there.
Yeah. You all you got to do is play the right deep cut, right?
Play the right song and you got it. Yeah.
So I want to focus on music a little bit more as well, because I'm going to take you guys, all you listeners, on a narrative here, because I would have characterized you like 3 or 4 years ago as a very successful, very type A, you know, a woman that looks like she's got it all together. Wouldn't want anything in the world. She's like killing it at her job, killing it in her career, has a great family. Like, and you made a jump, and I got to be very lucky to be sort of at the beginning phases of that, having coffee in 2017. But I mean, you changed your life, and that in like a very dramatic way. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about like the when you finally decided to just like jump in with both feet?
Yeah. So what he's talking about was, I've done medical sales I've done it for like 12 years at that point. When I was living in Dallas, you know, I did it, and it affords you a very nice luxury lifestyle. You know, you're able to do the things, and I was using all that money to basically afford me to go to these festivals and concerts and travel all around the country and go to music shows and do these things. And then I just realized, as I, you know, moved away from Dallas and was doing the same thing, was still like managing reps. And then I had started a music blog with my friend that you mentioned. And so that was our way, because music was a big thing for her and me as well. Like, we loved music. She was my concert buddy. We went to everything in Dallas together. So that was our way of like staying connected. And so we started this music blog, and she was more of like, well, we each had our strengths. So she was very good at like the operational, organizational piece. I was really good at like, you know, copywriting, and like, we both would just, we had two kind of different views of music as well, but that was like our passion project, and that's what it was supposed to be. Well, classic me, who's competitive and who's wants things, an achiever, you know, classic hyperachiever. I wanted this to be something, and I grew art. So we started like an Instagram account, grew that very quickly. Very, very quickly. And, you know, we loved it, but I just started seeing it more opportunity to be a business. And so, you know, when she moved to California, I moved to Austin, and I just saw this opportunity of like, wow, like we can, because people are reaching out, and that's kind of, these things kind of get written for you with the opportunities that present themselves. And you're like, you're putting yourself in, you have to do all the right things. And one of my favorite quotes from college that I literally like live by is like, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. So I'm always like, if I prepare, you know, when I have the opportunity, it's all going to like come together, you know, desire, believe, and achieve. But basically, it just got to a point where I was like, I want to create my own thing in Austin. I was like, I live in Austin. I just see this where I want to be the local, like, I want to be the local go-to person. I want to promote brands here, and literally have this conversation before I even took that jump. I talked to you about it and was, you know, with her. And you said from the beginning, because our faces are nothing, was like, there's still like influencers and stuff. Yeah, we sat with you and we talked, and you were like giving us creative strategy and kind of telling us where to go with it. And you had made a point of being like, you guys are eventually going to have to be the face of this. And that was something like my friend and I at the time both shared a fear of being in front of the camera and being in front of any kind of audience. We didn't want to use our faces. We're very self-critical of ourselves. And you know, I can't speak to her of where she was in that mindset, but I know that was something we both did not want. We're like, no, like this, let's just do this, you know? And then as it started to grow, and then I saw the opportunity of like, people were constantly reaching out to me on my Instagram of being like, hey, you look like you go to a lot of shows, and I'm coming in from Houston. I don't know how they'd find me, but they'd find me, and they're like, oh, what's happening this week? And it started happening like 4 or 5 times a week. So I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to start a calendar, figure something out. And then serendipitously, like I had two friends from like two different, in the same day, both call me. They're like, one person was introducing me to someone. They're like, Clarissa's like the concert queen of Austin. And I was like, oh, thanks. You know? And then later that night I went to a show and my friend was introducing me and she's like, oh, Clarissa's like the Austin concert queen. Like, she goes to everything. And I was like, okay, two people just called me the concert queen the same day. Like, that's, there's something there. So I ended up like changing my name on Instagram. And meanwhile, I'm still working medical sales. I'm still doing that, but I'm still kind of developing this brand. And so ultimately, like, my friend and I parted ways on that particular music blog. And I, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to be doing this. And so it was just like a time commitment thing. And she wanted to keep that. And I was like, well, this is where I want to go. This is the direction I want to do. So before it, becoming a quote unquote influencer, I don't even think it was really called influencer then, like, you know, almost 3 years ago, but yeah, changed my name. And then, like you said, I just became more and more like one of those like fake it till you make it things. I went out there and I put myself out there with all these different brands and people that I wanted to work with. Cause I didn't, and this is the big difference between me and a lot of other people you see is like, everybody that I represent, all the brands I work with even now, but even back then I was like, I don't want to be that, like that gummy bear hair or fit tea, right, or these people that are just getting paid to promote whatever comes their way because they have to. So I was making good enough money in medical sales. I was like, well, I'm going to go. And like, for instance, like Aviator Nation was a brand that I really liked. It fit me as like, it's a very 70s rock vibe, and approached them. But I like literally went in with the intention of like, how can I support these people? And what would, you know, I'm going to post them on my Instagram and take a bunch of stories because it was like new and upcoming. And I bought my, you know, the whole outfit from there and spent like $200. But then that has now paid in dividends from the relationships that I have with them. And now I have a partnership with them. So it definitely started shifting when I realized I was less and less passionate about what I was doing with medical sales. I felt like I literally felt like I was impersonating an old, like, it just didn't fit anymore. It was like trying something on. You're like, I don't like this anymore. This isn't who I am. And this doesn't feel good anymore. I'm depressed, even though I was making really, really, really good money still. And it was safe. My body started to like reject wanting to do that. And I didn't want to do it. And I was fortunate again to have the means to pay for things and do things. But in hindsight, you know, I maybe jumped the gun a little too quick with COVID, but I finally decided to make the switch into, I was going to be like full-time social media. And then people started approaching me to promote their social media. I grew my following all organically, like never bought a follower, never bought a like. I'm very proud of that. And so people started approaching me and I just learned strategy. I learned anything that I do and that whole goal-oriented thing, even with sports, is like, I dive into it. And if that's what I'm doing, like, I'm going to go all in. And so that's what I did with this, is I was reading, I listened to podcasts, I bought programs to learn about anything and everything I could learn about Instagram and the algorithm. So that's what I did. And then, so I started, had an opportunity to manage that. So I thought, like, with managing some people's social medias, with my social media, I had finally made enough that was equivalent to what I had made with my pharmaceutical job that I had at the time. So I was like, oh,
that's
like,
so cool.
I'm good, you know? And then I've got South By coming up. Great.
Well, then, right.
You know, a little thing called the pandemic happened and we lost some clients. The deals that I was kind of banking on went away, and it hasn't been easy, but I mean, it's definitely been a growing experience. And I have to keep remembering that while I'm not where I want to be yet, I am almost there. Like, I feel like I'm right on this hump of like about to really just kind of make some big moves and things are starting to happen. But that's one thing that I will say that has been the biggest, and I know you know this as well, because we've actually talked about it, but people don't also, they don't always see the behind the scenes, the work that goes into it. People are just like, oh, I want to do what she's doing and I want to do this, but they don't know like the hours and hours and hours that I've spent behind the scenes of learning and putting everything together and putting like supporting brands that maybe I wasn't getting paid from, but I'm doing it because I know that that's what I want to represent and that's what I want to be. And it's good practice for me. And it's all about supporting other people and artists and, hey, can I come to your show? And really pitching and selling yourself
right
to everyone. Everybody thinks like, oh, she just, I've had this one guy make a comment one time. He's like, oh, it must be nice to be like a hot chick and have this. I'm like, that's not how it works. Like if you saw all, I mean, I wish it did. I wish right. that's how it was. But in this day and age, that's never, I've never relied, you know, my mom. So my mom is a very strong, like I know everybody says that, you know, the parents are their heroes, but mom really is like my hero and a role model for me because she really instilled in me and, you know, my dad, like work ethic. And my mom was very, very big on making me tough and independent and not having to worry about other people. So, or people supporting me in that sense of like, I need to create my own thing. If I want something, I got to do it. I got to make it happen. So that's what I did. I saw a need for me. I saw where I wanted to go and I saw a goal. Like I told you the goal. I was like, this is what I want. So how do I work backwards to make that happen?
Well, I think it's really interesting. I want to focus on two things. First of all, your mom is a badass entrepreneur in her own right. And I have to say, you know, for listeners who know me, like we now have an agency and, you know, I quit my job 4 years ago, almost to the day, but wow. Your mom was one of my first freelance clients. Like she was, I think the second ever freelance job
I did.
And so I remember working with her and I was always so surprised by her. She had no idea. She like admitted it at the top. She's like, I don't know what we're doing here. You've got to help me. But by the end of it, she knew how to do it. And she had taught herself and like learned this, like, you know, pretty interesting, like LinkedIn thing that we did together. And yeah. I hold your mom in very high regard and just a special place in my heart. So, number two, before we go down like the emotional family, stories, you talked about COVID and the fallout as a growth opportunity. And I want to focus on that for a second, because that is a shooter's mentality if I've ever heard one. That's sports in a nutshell. If I could like bottle up like the ethos of this podcast into one little pill, that's what it would be, is to be able to look at difficult scenarios as opportunities for growth, not as like defeating, because you're going to lose games. Your coach is going to say something mean to you. You're going to potentially get hurt. You're going to have stumbling blocks or obstacles. And it's all about how you look at those things. So
totally.
Is that something that you think sports, I mean, obviously like the way you were raised and your parents, obviously, but like how did sports influence you to have that mindset?
I think with sports, it's, you have to get up. There's always, my best friend from college and I used to joke, your next shot's your best shot. And her and I would like yell that at each other on the floor if we missed or whatever, or we'd tell each other that. And it was more of like a joke, but in hindsight, it was actually like a metaphor for everything. Like you have to keep going and you have to keep shooting, and you can't just, if you miss however many, like just keep shooting, keep going. And falling down, you have to get right back up because you have other people. It's different from team sports to me are just so beneficial. And I'm sure I never have done solo sports, so I can't really speak to that. But for me and being part of a team, you don't want to let people down. And I still have like that team mentality. I like to feel like I'm part of something or that I'm contributing something to the greater good. And that's my purpose. And when I feel like with sports, you learn very quickly, like even if you're going to get punished for it, maybe you like, you know, I can't tell you how many times we come home after a game and have to run for whatever happened during the game. I don't even, like, that's how, you don't remember those moments. You remember the punishment, or you remember, you know, those times, but you have to keep going and you have to push other people as well that are with you to keep going. And that's kind of like my mom too. I think my mom did a really great job of putting on, even if it was hard for her or whatever it was, she always put on a strong face for me. And that kind of taught me as well. Like, even though this is hard, I have to be strong, and there's gonna be times too, but I do think that has taught me it's very hard for me to show vulnerability, and it's very hard for me. And you were in the class, I think, with me when, and this is a transformative DCH moment, but y'all, it was an exercise where you guys made us pretend to, or we had to play somebody that you wanted us to play. So there was a pattern of all of us that we all played. And that's why I was laughing at the beginning of this podcast, because you mentioned this alpha. You told me, you're like, Clarissa, you always play like alpha roles. You're always the boss, or like
high status character. Clarissa Cardenas is a high status character.
I was always playing high status characters. And so you made me play an insecure middle school boy, which was such a testament. And I ended up like doing, it was so uncomfortable, but so great. And that's why I love, like, I love improv, because that's, here I am with this front of always wanting to be like, not show weakness, not show that I can, those things. And so that was something great for me. But I think that is what sports does, is it makes you sometimes like, you can't show weakness in those moments. If you're playing defense and I see you, you're looking for that weakness. You want to get inside their head, you know, you're trying to like get a rise out of them. So you, that mental toughness is what you're taught as an athlete. And I think that's where, if anything, now it's okay to athletes to show some vulnerability now and to put that guard down every now and then. That's what I've learned. I don't think I have not had that for the longest time. Because of that, as evidenced at DCH, I was used to playing high status because I felt like that's what my ego couldn't handle a hit. Sure. Like
that. When you think of like advice that you'd give to your younger self, is that where you would start, do you think?
100%. I would tell myself, the biggest advice, and I actually said this in another, so I used to have this reoccurring dream, and it was a dream that I had since seventh grade until literally like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So 20 years or so, I had this dream that it was in an arena. I was playing basketball and like my dad was in the stands. And then my coach was there. My coach was like a blend of all the coaches I'd had, mm-hmm. you know, and I had this dream where I would just keep screwing up in the game. I would miss a shot. I would disappoint everybody. And I remember I was seeing a therapist at the time and I had this dream and I told her about it. And I was like, how do I make myself like play good in the game and get everybody's attention and love, you know? And she's like, that's not the point of the dream. And she's like, the point of the dream is to be, because the one that had like really messed with me is that I didn't even get in the game this time. I was sitting on the bench the whole time and I never got in and I was so sad. And she was like, the point of that dream is that you need to be okay with not getting in the game. Your value and your identity is not tied into performance. It's tied into being just who you are, and not your identity is not. And I feel like that happens to so many athletes. Like our identity is in that I was an athlete. That's what people lead with. It's a big achievement. I get it. If you did it, you did it. And I think for me, that was definitely something that I kind of hung my hat on, was that, oh, I'm an athlete. I'm an athlete. I'm an athlete. I'm an ex-college athlete. Oh, I played college basketball. Oh, I did this. And it is a sense of pride, but now it's in the sense of like, okay, that's a part of who I am, but that's not who I am.
Right.
And it's not part of my story. So I would definitely tell everyone, and I would show like, you know, I've even thought about like coaching kids teams, but if I could do that, I would definitely be more just, it's okay. Whether not that soft mentality, but it's okay. If you win or lose, you're going to have another game. You're going to have another opportunity to make up for it and to do better, but this is okay. Like you're still loved, you're still appreciated, and you're still high worth individual.
It's always tough for achievers. You said that earlier that you're an achiever. I am that to the 100th degree. I just, and you know, some of those things that serve you really well when you're younger or when you're trying to achieve and you're really competitive, when you grow older, get a little distance, you know, you start thinking about coaching kids, which is like, you know, such an athlete thing to do, is like, hey, the things that I learned, I'm not going to pass on to them. I'm going to help them, you know, avoid some of those pitfalls that I had to go through.
Yeah.
I want to talk before we get to close, you talked about your Sports Illustrated prep, which was a return to that athletic mindset. I think even like you 4 or 5 days a week with like 5 a.m. spin classes, I remember I would see on your Instagram story. Like dedication, hard work.
Yeah.
So getting back into that state and where you had this goal that you were chasing, did it feel familiar? What was it like?
There was a lot. I feel like it was like the culmination of all of everything I had done, all the mental work, all like everything I was doing, the athlete, like I knew how to train for it, but I just needed something. I needed a goal. I wanted to feel good. My birthday was coming up. Like the tryouts were literally like 2 weeks before my birthday. And I just wanted to feel good about myself again. And I was like, well, what else could I do that's really going to push me out outside of my comfort zone that would make me super freaking uncomfortable? And I had this thing at the time of like making myself uncomfortable. So made the commitment to do that. And you're right. I was literally I just knew it was like, it was all encompassing of diet. And that was one of the things I realized was like, you can't continue. I couldn't go out till stay out at a warehouse party till 5 a.m. and then try to get up for spin glass at 7 a.m. the next day. It's weird. That doesn't like work.
That's some sort of balance or something.
I don't know. So I had to it really was an all or nothing thing. I had to go home and go to sleep, had to cut out alcohol, had to cut out all these things. And I haven't sacrificed anything like that since college days. So going through that sacrifice and then getting, when I actually was in Miami and had done the whole thing, you know, I'm sitting there in front of, you know, an actual Sports Illustrated model. And, you know, I had taken photos too, which is, there's like the whole journey with that of like taking photo, cause I was super insecure, and then taking these photos to show her. And I sat down and I like pushed my like poor thing over to her, like my book, and I start crying, just like start bawling, crying. And she's like, oh my God. I was like, you have no idea like what it's taken for me to get to this point and the sacrifice. It was like a release of just all that stress and those tireless hours. And you didn't realize, I hadn't worked in it like that for a really long time. And to have her just say, she's like, wow, like these are better than my photos, was enough validation for me, you know? And it ended up being like a different, that what they were looking for was basically like Instagram numbers and all kinds of stuff like that, as it does. But like, I know in my heart, I was like, I know who I am. I know who I became. I know that I did it. And it was worth it for sure.
And I think that to me, you know, cause we could talk about my pro basketball career is basically the same. Yeah. It's like, you know, it was very short lived. It was not filled with glory, but I didn't have to go back and wonder sitting at a desk. Exactly. Yeah, I can sit at my desk now a whole lot more relaxed than if I had let that opportunity go by. So props to you for putting it on the line and making the sacrifice.
Yeah, props to you too for doing it. Because I think that's the biggest thing is people live with regrets or they're too scared. People find excuses not to do things. And I mean, that's the biggest thing. I think people just find, and even now, like you find distractions, you find something. And that's where I feel like COVID has really, this time has removed those distractions. You haven't been able, you can't hide anymore from the things. You could keep adding vices, but if it's like, no, if you don't do it, you have to just sit down and commit to it and do it. It'll happen. But there's so many people that just don't put the work in. And once you do it, like once I reached that goal and I felt good, I was like, damn, okay, I did it. Like now I can move on to the next goal.
Yep.
But a lot of people don't think like that. They don't even get started on it.
I totally agree. Well, I can't wait to see what you do next and what you apply yourself to. What is anything that you can share kind of that's on the radar for the Austin Concert Queen in 2021? And obviously we'll plug all of your social in the post game.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing for me right now is just I started like a podcast, YouTube show, interviewing artists and musicians. And that's really where my heart is. And I love, 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 love doing it. And I hope just to get bigger with that and grow, who knows, like where that will go and who I'll be interviewing, where I'll be. But that's where my heart is music and all the, my connection to it, my love for it. I've learned that I don't want to be a DJ. I don't want to be anything. I love the entertainment piece of it. And I love the gift that people have and being able to share that and communicate that story with them. So that's kind of what definitely my biggest like push, I would say, for 2021.
And we will definitely link to your YouTube show in the show notes in your pod. I've seen you posting about it on Instagram, even the Fire Festival episode, which is big fun.
It's a good one. So really, that's the untold story. Have you listened to it yet or watched it?
I watched the IGTV. Yeah, I did. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, you got to watch the YouTube is pretty ridiculous.
All right. Well, then I will definitely check that out for sure because it's an awesome story.
Yeah.
One final question before I let you go. And this is just something I think earlier you talked about the opposite side, which was when you were working, you know, at your medical sales job, which mm-hmm. you were good at and had done for many years, and it didn't fit anymore.
Right.
I want to flip that. What was the moment for you as the Austin Concert Queen, where you just like the music hit you or something and you were like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is me. Do you remember a moment like that?
I think, golly, I don't think I've had, I don't know if there was like any kind of moment because I think I just went in and started like owning it. But I think when I started to get like recognized in public and people started, because then they started to happen, it started to happen a lot. People were like, hey, like, I had just moved to the city and I found your Instagram and you told me about my favorite band coming in town that I didn't know about. I ended up meeting all my friends there, my now friends that I have, or, hey, I just moved here and I went to this event. Like those types of stories are, oh, hey, like I love, but it was like, these people don't necessarily like engage with me or talk to me, but just meeting them in real life, you're like, oh, someone's listening. So yeah, I don't think there was any kind of like real defining moment, because I think I just, and even then it's just, it's, I've made a point, like that's not my identity. We're all, you know, it's a piece of who I am, but it's not who I am. And I think that's a safe place to stay with it and just continue to use the platform to help support others and continue with that, which is what I love doing, connecting with people.
Yeah, healthy boundaries for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. Recovering achiever, Clarissa Cardenas. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
I recovered. I'm still an achiever.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, definitely still like to achieve.